if you would find Exodus and find chapter 14, we'll be ready to start in just a moment. I want to remind you of where we were. Last week we discussed the last of the plagues, the Passover of the death angel, and the Israelites being allowed to leave. And as they left, if you look at chapter 13, verse 17, it indicates that God intervened, and instead of taking them towards the promised land by the shortest route, which would have taken them where? Chapter 13, verse 17, which would have taken them where? Into the land of the Philistines. These were coastal coastal peoples. Phoenicia and Philistia were up in there. Instead of taking them to the north and west, he took them to the south and west. And we've talked a little bit about sort of where that looks like that might have been. Verses 20 and 21, still in chapter 13, God's leading was visible to the people in what form? A pillar of fire at night and a pillar of smoke or cloud in the day. A pillar of smoke, a pillar of cloud in the day. Was that two different things? Was that two different things? Probably not. At night you could see the fire, in the day you could see the smoke from the fire. Okay? Where did the cloud, the pillar of fire, the pillar of cloud, where did it place itself? In front of the people, leading them. Okay? Now, this takes us to chapter 14. Last time, I think we talked about the first four verses. And I propose that we do that very briefly, just sort of get everybody running again. Now, you had an assignment, but I'll remind you of that assignment in just a moment. The Lord spoke to Moses, verse 1 said, and said, tell the Israelites to, what are they supposed to do?
Turn back.
Now, back doesn't mean exactly the way they came, but it does mean they had been moving in an easterly direction. He was now having them move in a westerly direction. And it looks like, if you sort of look at where things must have been, the commentators and so forth will help you a bit. It looks like he took them, instead of generally southwest, he began to take them southeast, back across where the Suez Canal would be now, and over to the western side of the Red Sea, or the western side of a very large lake that's called the Sea of Reeds. Most commentators think it was probably the side of that very, very, very large lake. So big that they called it a sea. Some of you will know they call the lake up in the north of Israel the Sea of Galilee, sort of that same kind of language. In any event, this is a description of where they're supposed to go. He tells them to pitch your camp opposite this place beside the sea. And then he tells Moses why he's doing this. And it begins, this is in verse 3, I think, middle of verse 3, Pharaoh will think. Do you see that? What's Pharaoh going to think? Confused and wondering. Let me read this out of the New Living Translation. The Pharaoh will think the Israelites are confused. They are trapped in the wilderness. Now, that's the verb I want to get. My translation doesn't have that verb, but I think that verb is better. Now, why are they trapped? The place they've chosen to pitch their camp has a body of water big enough to be called a sea, or referred to a little later as an ocean. We don't think it, the commentators don't think it was salty, so that, you know, they wouldn't have been using our precision of language at that time. But big enough to be called a sea on the eastern side. They would have had very, very impenetrable mountains on the western side. They would have had an impenetrable desert to the south of them. So they're tucked into this space. How many people were there? Bible says 600,000 men of fighting age. If you add in women, children, and the elderly, you might have as many as 1.5 million or 2 million. Some estimates are as high as 2 million. So here they are, pitched there. Right? Pharaoh will think the people are confused. They are trapped in the wilderness. Okay? Now look at the next thing God says. What does he say next? I am going to harden his heart. Now that's what had been happening. Remember we looked at that through the study of the plagues a couple of weeks ago. There was a time when Pharaoh hardened his own heart, and then there's a time when God started hardening his heart, and there's a message in there for you. I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after you. And then God says, I have planned this. This is the New Living Translation. I have planned this in order to display my glory through Pharaoh and his whole army. After this, the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. What did the Israelites do? Last of that verse, I think it's verse 4. They obeyed. Okay, that alone is fairly amazing. Let me come back to this translation. Over here he says, I will display my glory through Pharaoh and his army. This translation, a different translation, says, I will win glory for myself at the expense of Pharaoh and his whole army. And the Egyptian people will know that I'm God.
The message says, I'll use Pharaoh and his army to put my glory on display.
Mm-hmm. That's closer to the New Living. All right? Now, here comes the army. Armies on the move, especially through a dry area, pitch up a big cloud of dust. You sort of figure out what it is by having scouts that are out there who come running back and say, the people find out here comes Pharaoh. What military power had Pharaoh brought with him? Now, if you've done what I asked you to and read forward, you got a chance of knowing this. If you didn't, you might have to scan real quickly.
Chariots.
How many chariots? No. It says 600 and... And it says all the other chariots. 600
are the best chariots.
600 is the best ones. It says down here, 600 of the best chariots and all the other chariots in Egypt with officers in each. Interesting thing. Back in World War II, you had people in charge of tanks and you had people in charge of airplanes. The ones in charge of the airplanes, they were all officers. The ones in charge of tanks, what were they mostly? Sergeants. Somehow, if you, all you're doing is just, you know, moving a plane from one place to another. You had to be an officer to do that. Move a tank from one place to another, you could be a sergeant to do that. I always thought they sort of missed a bet way back there to set up a hierarchy of sorts. If they just let the sergeants fly the planes, it might have been over even earlier than it was. It looks like here, the people in charge of the chariots were officers because it says there was an officer in each. I don't know if that means each chariot, in which case they were like the Air Force, or if it means in each unit of chariots, and the units might have been 10 or 50 chariots, I don't know. But it says 600 of the best and all the others. Do you agree that that's what it says? There's another place where it says, this is verse 8, the Lord made Pharaoh, king of Egypt, stubborn. He gave chase to the Israelites. The Israelites marched confidently away, but the Egyptians... Now, I'm at the tail end of verse 9 now. The Egyptians, all of Pharaoh's horses, and by implication, all of his chariots, all of his horsemen, and all of his army came after them. What military power was Pharaoh bringing? Starts with E. Everything he's got. How many people were there? Possibly as many as 2 million. You better have a lot of military force to be able to control that big group. There's another place that we've already read. When they left, they plundered Egypt. Egypt was so anxious to get rid of them, they gave them everything they had, and that included that those 600,000 men walked away fully armed. They had not been trained as military warriors, but they had been doing slave labor, which means that they probably were about as physically fit as anybody could be. Don't know what nutrition they had had, but they'd been doing hard work. And they were probably physically fit. So here they are, fully armed, physically fit, 600,000 of them. He's bringing everything he can. So your assignment was, what's the reaction of the people? What was Moses' reaction? And what did God have to say about all of it? And we're going to see if we can get to the point where after a brief discussion, we get two words for each one. That's a pretty good summary, right? If we can get two words for each one. Did you do your homework? Chuck, you obviously did.
I wasn't even here last week.
Oh, you're claiming ignorance of the assignment, right?
I'm claiming ignorance.
Yeah. Okay.
Although I'm scanning quickly.
Good boy. Good boy.
I've done this before.
Yeah. And it's been half successful for you, right? What's the reaction of the people?
Terrified. And they looked up and saw them and stuff like that.
As Pharaoh approached, this is verse 10, the Israelites looked up, and there they were, Egyptians in pursuit of them. The Israelites were terrified, and they cried out to the Lord for help. And to Moses they said, there weren't enough graves in Egypt. You had to take us out here to die.
You see Edgar G. Robinson saying that.
I think he did.
I know. This mobster voice.
Yeah. You got the picture now? Okay. Now, I want to read a little further. What was the point of bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we tell you as much when we were in Egypt? Leave us alone, we said. That's verse 12. Does your tail end of verse 12 say that? Leave us alone, we said. We would rather work for the Egyptians, we said. We prefer to work for the Egyptians rather than to die in the desert. Okay, now can you summarize that? And I'll give you this. It's not easy. Because what you got to do is walk through what they said to the implications of what they said. Because they haven't quite said it, but I think it's there.
Can't trust
them. No.
No faith.
No.
Blame them.
What the people said was, let's surrender and go back. Let's go back. We shouldn't have left in the first place. What were we thinking? What were you thinking? This situation we're in, let's go back. Now, just in case you think that's not what they're saying, keep an eye as you get further into this. They're going to say it again. Not here. They're going to get through all of this. They're going to get into another situation. They're going to say it again. They're going to say it again. They're going to say it. This is going to be a theme of theirs for a while. What were you thinking? We ought to just go back. And this is sort of the first time of saying that. They're 3, 4, 5, 6 days out, however far out they are. And they're saying, I think, in essence, we ought to go back. We should never have left. They say we should never have left. I'm interpreting that as we should go back. Is that fair? Will you accept that?
Well, the doohickey says...
The doohickey. The doohickey. That's what you just called that, the doohickey? That's good. Go ahead. Read from the doohickey.
Oh my gosh. We're better off as slaves in Egypt than we are to be corpses in the wilderness. Sorry.
Yeah, it would be better for us to go back. That's what I'm saying. Okay? What was Moses' reaction? And the key phrase for Moses is in verse 13. That's not it. That's where he starts. But his instruction, the next one, stand firm.
Yeah, stand firm.
Now let's review so far. The people say,
let's go back.
Let's go back. Let's go back. Put our hands in the air. Let's go back. Moses says, stand firm. Is everybody okay? Can we review that one more time? What the people say? Go back. What did Moses say? What was God's conclusion? March on, my translation says. Move forward, yours says. Where is that? That's verse 15. Wow. What did the people say? Go back. What did Moses say? Stand firm. What did God say? Get going. Now, here's my question. Where? There's Pharaoh. There's impenetrable mountains. There's an impassable desert. And here is a body of water big enough that we're calling it an ocean and we're not blinking at that. March on. Where? And now we get to verse 16 because God is speaking to Moses. I'm sorry. Somewhere. Verse 15, verse 16. We almost missed it. The Lord said to Moses, this is verse 15. What's the first thing God says to Moses? This is fascinating. Don't miss this. What's the first thing God says to Moses? Why are you crying out to me? Now, why did God say that? Because Moses had been... This isn't hard. God said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? He said that because Moses had been crying out to God. I just want to make sure you see that. Right? Now, Scripture doesn't tell us that. Scripture shows God's response. Moses says to the people, stand firm. And then what does he say? God, what are you doing? What are you doing? Help me understand. What's going on here? And God says, why are you crying out to me? Tell the people to march on. Your part is what? Raise your staff over
the sea.
Ooh, that's pretty hard. He's got an arm that's maybe a foot, 2.5 feet long, and a staff that may be 6 feet further than that. Raise your staff over the sea and divide it. There's a cartoonist who wrote the cartoon strip Far Side. And I have to tell you, some of the Far Side cartoons I think are the funniest I've ever seen. One of those, he's absolutely irreverent. He pokes fun at anything. His cartoon caption says, "Moses at a young age." And here's this little boy with a stick in his hand and a glass of water. He's going like this. The milk, glass of milk, and the milk's going like this. You hold your staff over the sea, and what's going to happen? The sea is going to divide. Has this ever happened in the history of the world?
No.
The sea is going to divide, and the Israel people are going to walk across on dry land. Isn't that what he says? While I, for my part, do you hear it? God says, your part, you tell the Israelites to march on. Get them moving. For your part, you hold your staff up. Sea's going to divide. They'll give them dry land to walk across. For my part, what's he going to do? I'm going to harden the heart of Pharaoh and all the Egyptians. They're going to follow. You got the story? This is one of the more familiar ones. If you know something of the Bible, there's a good chance you know this one. What happens? If you read a little bit more, it says he held up his staff, looks like half the night. And the strong east wind came and divided the water. East wind doesn't sound right. Should have been a north or south because I picture the body of water splitting this way, but who knows what directions they were going. Anyway, the water backs up and moves over. And what would the bottom have looked like when the water receded? Muddy. The wind blows and it all dries out and they're walking across on dry land. Now, where was that pillar of fire and smoke all this time? It moved from in front of them around to behind. This is a part that Cecil B. DeMille got right. It moves around to the back. And if you've got a wall of fire and smoke, you're not going to see what's happening on the other side. So Pharaoh's approaching. He sees maybe as many as 2 million people all encamped there. He sees all of them. All of a sudden, this big wall of fire and smoke goes up. Right? He doesn't know what's happening on the other side of it. He's just out there waiting and waiting until he can get through. By the time he gets ready to go, he looks. There's nobody there. He sees the last of them walking across. Here's this path of dry land through an ocean. That path hadn't been there. And God hardens his heart. And what does he do? He says, "Let's go, boys." And who goes in there? Everybody. His best chariots and all of his other chariots, his horsemen, his troops, everybody. They go. Now let's hold them there for just a second because Rusty has his hand up.
Well, I was just noticing in this it says, thus it was a cloud of darkness to the one and made light and light to the other.
Oh, I didn't notice that part. So he puts cloud this way and fire this way.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, okay. I hadn't spotted that. Maybe the east wind was blowing.
The smoke over.
I used to be in the chemical corps. I trained at Fort McClellan one summer. And they taught us how to make smoke. Now, if you do that on a ship, you can, you know, sort of smoke in a bay or something and screen what the destroyers are doing and the carriers are doing. In our case, there was a temperature inversion that day, and we blanketed Birmingham with smoke. All the traffic came to a halt. They never did figure out exactly where it came from, but it smelled oily. We all knew because we'd been running those smoke generators. Okay, so they're smoked in. Nobody ever told, as far as I know. I never told. Don't tell Birmingham now. We're about to go visit them. We're about to go visit them in the next few months. Okay. Where are Pharaoh and his people? They're on the dry ground, crossing across. And apparently it's long enough that the whole of that army could get in there, and the water collapses back in. Would you look at chapter 15, verse 1? Chapter 15, verse 1. It was then that Moses and the Israelites sang this song in honor of the Lord. I will sing to the Lord, for he has covered himself in glory. What's the second phrase? Horse and rider he has thrown into the sea. And the song goes on from there. couple of you will have heard this before. Pretend that you haven't. Little boy goes to Sunday school, comes home. He's sitting at dinner. His mother looks over at him and says, "What did you learn in Sunday school today?" Said, "Well, we talked about the crossing of the Red Sea with Moses and the Israelites." "What happened?" "Well, Moses called his engineers. His engineers came up. They built a pontoon bridge. And the people went across on the pontoon bridge. And as they were going across, another group of engineers were planting charges on the pontoon bridge. And as soon as the people got across, the Egyptian army came on and they blew up the pontoon bridges and all the army was dead." Silence for a moment. Mother looks over and says, "Is that really what your teacher said?" Little boy hangs his head and says, "No. But you wouldn't believe what she said happened." Okay? If you had been watching from the shores like the Israeli people were, you could hardly believe it either. In a moment, almost in the twinkling of an eye, the threat that had you bottled up for 430 years is gone permanently. What would the Egyptian people have thought when they heard about this? What do you think?
Yeah, that's already said part of what they would
think
or will think.
Yeah. Let me tell you. I don't think they would have heard. I don't think there were any survivors. I think they see every military power and every government leader they have go off in chasing. They would have known the Israelites had gone. And here goes the army, everybody and his horse with them. And nobody comes back. What would that do to a country? I can't imagine.
Does history reflect it?
Not so far as I know, but how could it? Who would write it?
Plus, they'd already lost their firstborn.
The firstborn, the heir to the throne, had already been killed.
And all the families lost their sons.
Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, here go the daddies. They're just gone. Okay? Now, it doesn't say, but I think that the people would have figured out there's nobody coming back. They probably would have sent a few people to look. They might have seen a couple of shattered chariots, a wheel or two, maybe a corpse of a horse or somebody else, although most of the people would have had armor on and would have been sunk by the armor. Okay. And I think the people of Egypt would slowly have started saying, something awful happened and we don't know what it was. But God was saying, let these people go. Now, how soon do you think it would take for the next countries up the line? What was that first country up the line, the one that God said he's not going to let them go to? Uh-oh. Philistines, right? Who's beyond that? The Moabites and the Edom, right? We've talked about them. And then the people of Canaan. How long would it take for them to have heard this? Okay. Look at verse 14 in chapter 15. Hearing of this, the peoples tremble. Everybody who hears of this trembles. Who's the first group they mention? And what term do they use for their reaction? Mine says pangs seize on them. Anxiety is another translation. Dread, I think, is another. What? Anguish. Anguish will grip them. Verse 15, what does it say? The chieftains of Edom dismayed. What's the next line? The princes, mine says. Yours says the leaders. The princes of Moab. Panic has seized them. All the inhabitants of Canaan, their hearts melted away. On all of them fell terror and dread. In a day, all the threats the Israelites had experienced from the Egyptians were gone forever. And they sang a song. Who sang the song? Go back to verse 1, chapter 15. Who sang the song? Moses and the Israelites. Which Israelites? Be chauvinistic, I invite you. Who sang the song? Moses and the men. Turn to verse 21.
My commentary says the song is the song of Miriam.
Turn to verse 20 and 21. What does that say? Here's mine. The prophetess Miriam. What was Miriam? She was a prophet. Can women be prophets?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently. File that one away. You might need that someday. The prophetess Miriam, identified as? But not Moses' sister. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Aaron's the older brother, and he's the spokesperson. But that's strange. Why are they doing that? Answer starts with I. I don't know. The prophetess Miriam, Aaron's sister, took up a tambourine. Is it okay to play tambourines in church?
Yeah.
Apparently. And all the women followed her with tambourines. And what were they doing?
Dancing.
Good heavenly days.
Dancing and singing.
And dancing while Miriam took up from them, presumably from the men, and then the women, the refrain. And what's the first thing she sings? She sings the first verse that Moses and the men sang. And I think she sang the whole song again. And I think the writer is simply telling you here, it starts up again. And this time the women are singing. Very interesting picture. Sing to the Lord, for he has covered himself with glory. Horse and rider he has thrown into the sea. Okay. Now we've done about all the damage we're going to do. There's more to do, but this is enough for one day. Except, I got to talk about this for a minute. What did the people say?
Go back.
What did Moses say?
Stand firm.
What was God's view? March on. Is it ever right to go back, or is it always right to march on? On this day, with these people, in this place, march on. On another day, in another place, God might well say, go back. On yet another day, in another place, to another people, God might say, stand firm. And as you watch what happens through Scripture, God chooses one or another of those. On this day, it's march on. What usually happens? God's people and even God's prophets sometimes don't see all of what God's doing and don't know the right one to pick. If you listen hard, God will let you know.
So the right one to pick is always hard.
Well, no. The right thing to do is make sure you know what God's saying. Has there ever been a time where going back is the right thing? You all know Valerie Carter? What's her history? You know? She grew up in hard places, in cities that almost had no heart for people who were poor and struggling. And she got out of there. She made it out. She made it to college. Got herself an education. And what's the first thing she did under God's leadership? She went back. And now she's working among us, helping us figure out how to go into the places that she knows well because she grew up there. Going back sometimes is absolutely the right thing to do. But not for this people. Not for this day. God ever say stand firm?
Yes. Isn't there a time in there where Moses was going to go forward and God said, well, go ahead, but I'm not going to be with you if you go forward. He says, all right, I'm camping right here.
Mm-hmm. I think about Jonah. God says, go this way. Jonah goes that way. And you've got to bring Jonah around where Jonah's going back. I think of some of the people, you'll see this a lot, where people are told, stand firm, don't run. Stand firm. On this day, in this place, it was march on. On another day, it's go back. On another day, it's stand firm. The key is not to pick one and say that's always what God's going to do. The key is to recognize those are the three. Go back into a situation that you've somehow gotten out of. And I don't know that I'll ever think of anybody, but Valerie is sort of a top example of that. Stand firm. Those people who, I guess I picture there, that poor fellow in China on Tiananmen Square standing in front of the tank. An image that the whole world saw. And then this group, march on. And I want you to think, anytime God says march on, there's a good chance there's going to be a whole bunch of people saying, where can we march on? And then God opens a way that you wouldn't have seen. I want to make sure you see that before we leave this.
Well, then there's also just people that, like, I don't think the march on, I think it's steady on.
Now, we're in chapter 15, right? There's a little bit more chapter 15 before we get to chapter 16, right? Maybe another 7 verses, something like that. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think the people stood there and looked at the water? So calm and tranquil, just sort of a little bit of waves. Knowing that underneath the waves is one of the most powerful armies that the world had ever seen at that time. The leadership, almost en masse, of one of the greatest countries, most powerful countries anyway at that time. All it says is Moses led Israel away. If you've got one translation, it'll say from the Red Sea. If you've got another translation, it'll say the Sea of Reeds. And they entered the desert of Shur. And they traveled through the desert for 3 days without finding water. Does the 3 days make you think of anything? I'll encourage you to keep thinking about that. I think of something. How long can you go without water? How long can you go without food? A little bit longer. A little bit longer. This is a serious thing. What did the people do? Verse 23, they reached a place that had water called Marah. And they went to drink the water. What did they find out? It was undrinkable. It was undrinkable. Let me read it with the words translated. When they reached the place Bitter, they could not drink the bitter water because it was bitter. That's why the place was named Bitter. Marah means bitter. And the place was named for that. The people, this is verse 24, did something. And this is not the last time they're going to do it. They're going to do this. This is a pattern you're going to see right along. What did they do?
Grumbled.
Okay, keep going. What other translations do we have?
Complained.
Murmured is in at least one. Griped was offered in the first hour, not from someone who had a translation, but said just felt like the right word. Okay. Muttered, I think, is another one. Murmured and muttered. That's different from gossip. Gossip is usually you think you know something nobody else knows and you're whispering to somebody else. Murmuring is we all know what's going on, but I think I'm upset enough to start criticizing. Right? The people complained. To whom did they complain?
Moses.
What did they say?
What are we going to drink?
What are we to drink? What did Moses do? The verb is real important. I like the verb in my translation this time. Cried out to the Lord. Mine says appealed to the Lord. I can almost hear Moses saying, they got a point, Lord, on this one. People without water aren't going to live very long. They need a place with water. Now, let's review. What did the people do?
Complained,
grumbled. What did Moses do? Appealed to the Lord. Cried to the Lord. What did God do? This is the strangest thing. What did God do? Read it carefully and make sure you see it. What did he do? Showed him a piece of wood, my translation said. Showed him a log, Cameron says. Showed him a tree.
A tree,
yours says. Okay. Mine says, showed him a piece of wood.
What verse is that?
I'm not telling.
Exodus 15, verse 25.
Moses appealed to the Lord for help, and the Lord showed him, mine says, a piece of wood. And there is a period there, and that's all you get. The next word is, when Moses did something, the water turned sweet.
How long did he get?
And that's my question. Okay, there's a piece of wood. What's that? And you sort of see this sense of Moses starting to think, I'm supposed to do something with this. Why not the staff? He just put the staff over the... I don't know. He throws the piece of wood into the water, and the water becomes sweet.
I wonder how long you held the stick of wood.
I don't know. I sort of picture, maybe the water went like this for a moment, but I don't know. But here's what I want you to see. What should the next verse say? The next verse should say they all drank to their heart's content, and that's not what it says. It says instead Moses took that moment to let them listen to God, because God begins to speak. There he, that is God, laid down a statute and a law for them and put them to the test. There he, that is God, said. And now, what's the next word? There he, that is God, said. This is verse 26. What is the next word?
If.
How many ifs follow? In the rest of that verse, how many ifs? Four. Two are explicit, and you can see them, the I and the F. Two are implicit. Two are explicit, two are implicit. If you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God, and if is implied, you do what he regards as right. Comma, new phrase. If you pay attention to his commandments, comma, and if is implied, keep all his laws. Then I, this is how you know God is the one speaking, shall never inflict on you any of the diseases that I inflicted on the Egyptians. For I am the Lord your healer. There are people who make a big deal of the study of the names of God as given in Scripture. That is a very good study to make. This is one of them. I think it's Jehovah Rapha. I think that was this one. God your healer. Now let's go back and look. Look at the first phrase and look at the second phrase. They're almost the same. You'd be tempted to say they are the same. This is a technique used in Proverbs. This is a technique used in Psalms. This is a technique used in some of the books of prophecy, where the writer will say something and then he will say it again, almost the same, but maybe with just a little different emphasis, letting you see some deeper meaning in it. That's what's happening here. I'll leave it to you and the commentators to see some of those. But listen to the first one. If you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God. Now listen to the first to the second one. If you pay attention to his commandments. Is it possible to listen without paying attention?
Yes.
But is it possible to pay attention without listening?
No.
And which one comes first? Listening. The second one says, if you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God, and if is implied, do what he regards as right. And then the second phrase, and keep all his laws. What was the problem in Jesus' day? He kept showing it to the Pharisees. You think you're keeping all the laws, and you're not doing what's right. Okay? Which one comes first? Doing what's right comes first. Because in the process, you will be obeying his law. If all you're trying to do is obey his law, you're not going to get the first one right. Very interesting set here. If, and then there is an implied then, I will never inflict on you any of the diseases. And once that was settled, verse 27 says, they went on and came to a place called Elim, and what did they find there? How many springs? How many sons were there for Israel, for Jacob? And how many palm trees did they find? And if you go way back, how many people was it that came out of Canaan into Egypt 430 years ago? 70. There's various numbers that people say, maybe it was as much as it, but around 70. Those are interesting numbers. Very interesting numbers. And we're going to let them rest there for at least a week. This is where we'll come back. Yes, ma'am.
Great thing that God has done, and every single day you're so happy. Then you go through the desert, the dry period, you're going to crash down, and you're so distraught, and you kind of forget how happy you were and how much you appreciate God, and God shows you the truth. He shows you God and the cross, and he wants to really tell you what to do, you know? You need to focus on doing what's right.
There's a beautiful little pattern here. There's a beautiful little pattern here. Crossing the Red Sea is one of the biggest things that could ever happen to anybody. And what happens after that? They almost die of thirst. And God says, I can make water that you can drink and this sustains you. And then where does he lead them? He leads them to a place where there's enough water for everybody. We don't know how long they stayed there, but the evidence is they stayed there a while. Now, let's make one reviewing. What did the people say? And sometimes they might have been right. What did Moses say? And we know sometimes that's right. What did God say? March on. Sometimes that's right. My prayer for you is that you'll know which one is which on the day you need to know. Y'all have a good week.